Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It was quite an opening round to this 124th U.S. Open. Tied for the lead after 18 holes. Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay, host of players Rex stacked up behind them, not discluding Ludvig Åberg, who's one shot back, as well as Bryson DeChambeau, who came in with a 3-under-67, putting him two shots behind. The big three just came into the flash area. Not everyone came into the media center. More on that in just a little bit. But what was your takeaway, Rex, from the big three of Rory McIlroy shooting 65, Xander Schauffele coming in at even par 70, and Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, the winner of five of his last eight tournaments, turning in a 1-over-71.
I think Scottie's round surprised me the most. I mean, look, we had him in a tier by himself. He was clearly the one runaway favorite for all the right reasons. And he talked about it in his post-round interview a little bit, touched on the idea. He felt like he actually scored halfway decently compared to how he hit the ball. And he put himself in a lot of bad positions on this golf course today. And if you do that, the numbers can add up really quick. So relative to the rest of the field, and I think the scoring average is almost, it's over three strokes over par right now. So relative to the rest of the field, he's still right there in it. He needs a good round tomorrow, but that one surprises me the most. Second surprise, and only slightly behind, is that Rory is right there, because we talked about it yesterday in the pre-tournament podcast, the idea that the one thing that Rory does well, his driver, when he's playing well, it all stems from his driver. He can overpower golf courses. He can do things with the golf ball off the tee that a lot of other players, most other players, can't do. Didn't seem like it was going to be the most important thing around this golf course, but if you look at his stats, he is top five in strokes gain approach to the green. He is top five in scrambling. Those are the areas where he excelled today. I mean, don't get me wrong. He hit some majestic drives, and the drive on 12, it was pure artistry. Like, I wish we could run that just in a loop over and over again, because it was just a beautiful shot. But it was really the other parts of his game that delivered today. And I loved the idea. And he leaned into this earlier in the week, and he reiterated today that he plays his best when he embraces sort of what the U.S. Open is. And that's a very, very difficult test.
Just to follow up what you said on Scottie Scheffler, I mean, very un-Scottie Scheffler round off of the tee. Scottie Scheffler currently ranked 116th strokes gained off the tee, found just six fairways. Some of those were in really poor positions, and he was just not able to attack the golf course, is not the proper terminology here, but he was not putting himself in a position where he could even just have sort of a stress-free round. It always seemed like he was scrambling, didn't putt particularly well either. We did not get Scottie Scheffler for very long afterward. In fact, he didn't talk to reporters, just simply did a Sirius XM interview. He was literally holding, I think, a 7-iron in his hand, just like chipping, just sort of swinging it, trying to get his feel, clearly itching to get to the range with his swing coach, Randy Smith, and try to figure out what bothered him in this opening round. I think if you're a Scottie Scheffler fan, you have to be a little bit worried, Rex, because in all likelihood, the USGA is going to be tightening the screws on this setup. If 500 par is leading after round one, it would not surprise me if we sat here on Sunday evening with the winning score somewhere around 500 par. 5, 6, 7 under par is probably the most likely scenario. I heard in Roy's voice tonight, while speaking to reporters, a lot of Scottie-isms, talking about stoicism, talking about conservative, talking about patience, talking about being very diligent in his preparation. That sounds a whole lot like Scottie Scheffler. So I think Roy certainly took some cues from playing with him 2 months ago. And I think everyone has seen during this winning stretch just exactly what Scottie Scheffler does well. That was exactly what I saw from Rory McIlroy in this opening round. 15 greens in regulation. Seemed like he was two putting for par. He filled it up with two birdies in his last three holes to give him a little bit of momentum now as he heads into the easier conditions on Friday morning, at least it's expected to be. So he can go out potentially feeling good about himself. What do you think about Rory building off of this round now as we look ahead to Friday?
No, I think you're right. And this goes back to when Tiger was playing his best golf, everyone wanted to do whatever it is that he was doing, the way he warmed up, the way he worked out on the range, everything that he was doing, they wanted to replicate it. And Scottie is sort of in that category as now. And I'll agree with you 100% that it seems like Rory is just a little bit more at peace this week than maybe what we've seen before. And it seems to me maybe there was a tipping point at the PGA Championship, because that was the 10-year anniversary, even though the timing's off because the PGA's played at a different time of year. But 2014 was the last major he won. That was the PGA Championship. And maybe that allowed him to sort of shed some of these thoughts that the pressure is on me. He actually talked about it earlier in the week. He was asked a pretty poignant question about the idea of roughly how are you going to gauge your career from this point going forward. And he kind of reflected a little bit on the idea that if you'd have told the kid from Northern Ireland when I was 10 years old and wanted to be the world's best golfer that I'd be in this position with my resume, I'd be pretty happy with it. And he also feels like he has another 10 years and a lot can change over those 10 years. So yeah, I think you're 100% right. A lot of this has to do with the idea that he's clearly playing well. We've seen that week in and week out. He's top 10 in Canada. He top 10 before that at the PGA Championship. I think all of these things are cumulative, but the bigger deal, the bigger issue right now seems to be, he just seems to be in a better mindset. And that's probably going to serve him well going into the weekend, because as we've addressed time and time again about this golf course, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to end up in a bad spot. You're probably going to make a big number. The trick is going to be how you respond to it. And he seems to be responding really well.
Yeah, Rory seemed very much to be in control on Thursday. You know, it's we talked about it with Tiger Woods in respect to, you can have this great game plan. You can have this strategy mapped out perfectly. But if you are unable to execute the shots, it really doesn't matter. Rory seemed to be obviously in control of his golf ball with a pretty sound approach as well, being very conservative off the tee. He ranked 30th in all driving distance stats. So not just the two measured holes where he was sending drivers. So I think that lends itself to the theory that he's sort of playing into position, finding the middle of the greens and taking birdies when he can get them. I've been struck, Rex, by Rory's adopting of the U.S. Open methodology. And he admitted that, you know, in the first 10 years of his career, really didn't like this sort of test where it's going to be gritty. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be nasty. It's going to be sort of a slug fest and a stress fest. That was really not Rory's sort of pretty game that he possessed. I think he's such a more well-rounded player now that he is able to sort of rise to the challenge and what the golf course presented. I thought that was a very mature approach that he's had, sort of learning to love golf course architecture more than he has in the past, understanding what the architect was trying to do and sort of embracing this style of play as opposed to sort of being just one dimensional where it comes to just bomb it, gouge it, birdie it, and move on.
And this goes to, I alluded to the shot on 12. I'm sure you've seen it. It was a stinger driver. And I was texting back and forth with Paul McGinley, who had posted something on X. He said the height of that drive was about 25% at what his normal height would be. It was a thing of beauty. I've never seen that out of Rory before. It was very much a Tiger-esque shot. We all know that we have that sort of seared into our consciousness. But when it comes to Rory, normally he's just hitting those high, booming, majestic draws. This wasn't that at all. This was a controlled, in the moment, this is what the golf course is giving me. And you're right. I think in this particular case, there's not a lot of guys that walked off that course today and truly can say to themselves, I had fun out there. Yes, it was hard. And yes, I had to work. And yes, mentally, I'm probably burnt out a little bit right now. But it was clear that Rory thoroughly enjoyed that. And he did go back to the idea. I mean, when he won the U.S. Open at Congressional, it was his words, not mine. It was set up soft. It was set up much more, quote, like a PGA Tour event. And it was. And up until, really, until I think he won the Open Championship at Liverpool, that was sort of the knock against him, that he could only win a major or a tournament on a soft golf course. That performance today was nothing like that. That performance was a work of art.
Also wanted to touch, Rex, on Bryson DeChambeau, who shot a 67 in this opening round. I mentioned him in the preview podcast as being sort of a polarizing player. There did not seem to be a consensus on how Bryson DeChambeau would be able to attack this golf course. In his pre-tournament press conference on Tuesday, Bryce had mentioned that he was going to be conservative and that he was going to have to hit 4, 5, 6 irons off the tee and not send driver. Apparently in game time, that is not what Bryson DeChambeau decided to do. Led the field in driving distance on day one, led this field in strokes gained off the tee. Were you a believer in Bryson before the week? And did anything that you saw on Thursday lead you to believe that he can capture his second U.S. Open title?
The answer to the first question, no, not really. And for the reasons I just laid out for Rory, and we did it in the preview podcast, the idea that what they do well didn't seem to be a great fit for this golf course. I mean, you go back to what Martin Keimer did, and I've thrown the stat out a couple of times now, but what he did well was he had his irons really well, and he one-putted 49% of his greens. If you want to break it down statistically, that's what's important. No one ever looks at Martin Keimer's driving and be like, ah, he overpowered that course back in 2014. You could probably say the same about Michael Campbell when he won here, and Payne Stewart. It's just not a golf course. It seems like it lent itself. However, in retrospect, when you watch what both of those players did today, they were clearly on their game, and Rory did miss some fairways early, and he ended up getting some good breaks. Like, let's be perfectly clear. Anyone who hit it in the scruff in that sandy area today, by and large, seemed to dodge what could have been awful lies. I think you told me there was one player that had to take a drop out of that sort of razor grass, and that's not at all what we expected. We expected it to be kind of a crapshoot. You go in there and it's 50-50, you're going to be able to advance it. That wasn't the case. So it will be interesting going forward if that's what we see on a regular basis. But when it came to Bryson, no, I don't think he was particularly on my radar. And I know he wasn't on yours because it didn't seem like this was a perfect fit for him.
Don't be lumping me within the Bryson skeptics.
Well, I was taking
more of a wait and see approach as it related to Bryson.
Don't run scared now.
I wasn't thrilled with the idea, but I mean, Bryson is driving it so straight for as far as he's hitting it. I mean, this is a continuation of what we saw at Augusta National. It's a continuation of what we saw at Valhalla. He's hitting it 330, and he's hitting it a lot of times down the center stripe. I mean, he missed just two fairways when driving accuracy is going to be such a huge key. If he continues that for the majority of this week, if Bryson DeChambeau is hitting 12 of 14 fairways while hitting at 330 yards, he is going to win this golf tournament because he is going to have such an advantage with the short clubs that he is hitting in to greens that are going to be increasingly firm. I think a lot of the discussion around Bryson and why people may have been a little bit skittish to sort of tout him as a favorite this week was really on and around the greens. Bryson DeChambeau historically has not been a very good, I would say, pitcher of the golf ball, where he needs to get the ball airborne. It's very much his swing path. It's the clubs that he's using. They're longer. He loves to hit these driving shots that check and roll out. That is exactly the sort of shots that you actually want to hit at Pinehurst. What he's not skilled at is sort of the thick rough. You lay it open and sort of cut underneath it. Those are the shots that give him a little bit of trouble historically. This, I think, plays right into his hands. He actually had a poor putting day, which was surprising for Bryson DeChambeau. He's always been an above average, underrated putter, just 53 feet worth of putts made in the opening round. I think he's a very dangerous player as we look forward to the rest of the week. How about your boy Ludvig Åberg in his U.S. Open debut, coming off the strong Masters performance, of course, and then a miscut at the PGA Championship. What stood out to you about the 24-year-old?
I got to throw a flag here. Are we just going to gloss over Patrick Cantlay, who's tied for the lead? Is this because, like, I'm trying to figure out what why you're driving the ship the way you're driving the ship? Because Pat had a really, really good round. It was early in the day. It seems like it was a long time ago, and it probably was.
What do you want to say? This is an open,
phenomenal round.
What do you want to say about Patrick Cantlay?
I'm going to spin this a little bit ahead, and let's say we get to the end of tomorrow and the leaderboard is kind of similar to what it looks like today. Imagine the juicy storylines that we could come up with Patrick Cantlay and Rory McIlroy playing against each other on the weekend of the U.S. Open with everything that's swirling around golf. And when we'll
what do you mean? How about a little backstory?
I'll do that. I wasn't even trying to be coy about the idea. I think it's pretty well known that Rory McIlroy wanted back on the PGA Tour's policy board after he stepped down last fall, and he wanted back on. And by all accounts, it was Patrick Cantlay who did not want him back on. Now, my understanding, the reasons behind that is because of the optics and what that would look like to the membership. I don't know if it was personal or not. I don't feel like it was personal. But the narrative, at least within the circles of the game, is that they don't particularly like each other. And this goes back to last year's Ryder Cup and what happened on the final green on Saturday afternoon and everything that transpired in the parking lot between our colleague Bones McKay, who just happened to be in the wrong spot, and Rory McIlroy, and it's just juicy storylines. And I'm just curious why you're glossing over them. This is normally the stuff you dig into.
I am. It's a little bit premature, I believe, for that. I'm also a bit skeptical that Patrick Cantlay will remain in this position for the duration.
Why?
Of the
tell
tournament.
Me that.
Just two top 10 finishes this year. He has not played well coming into this. Historically, in the major championships, he has also not fared particularly well. To hear Patrick Cantlay say he's been going through some swing changes, did not say what the swing changes were with his swing coach, Jamie Mulligan, but he said that if you're working hard and you're working on the right things, eventually it pays off. Apparently it did in the opening round. Just one bogey. He made it on the very difficult par 3 15th hole. He did sign for a 65. I'm just not sure. Particularly when he's teeing off on Friday afternoon, when the conditions could be baked out, that he will be there by day's end.
Okay, that's fair enough. And you asked me about Ludvig, my boy. I was very excited about that. And the story that I wrote this afternoon on NBCSports.com/golf is the idea that we keep talking about first with Ludvig. It was his first Ryder Cup. It was his first PGA Tour win back in the fall. It was his first Masters. I mean, first major at the Masters. This is his first U.S. Open. Every step of the way, he plays like a veteran. He handles himself like a veteran. I don't know if this is sustainable. You talk about, you look down the leaderboard, which one of those guys will be around on Sunday, because he hasn't exactly been a model of consistency over the last few weeks. However, I do love the storyline there as well, simply because here is a fresh face, newcomer with so much potential, and you can just see how his confidence is growing. And in twofold, when it comes to this particular golf course, he actually said the 2014 U.S. Open was the first one that he remembers really watching and getting into. Martin Keimer, clearly, there was a European connection there. And he also played the U.S. Amateur here. I think he advanced to the second round of match play, if I'm not mistaken, back in 2019. So there is a really cool connection there. And I would love to see how this weekend transpires.
Is Ludvig playing hurt?
I don't know. I asked him specifically about it. There's been reports that he had some sort of a knee issue, and he said, no, everything is absolutely fine. And the way he hit the ball today and the way he's moving around this golf course, it seems like that's the case, but we'll have to see.
Nice little cop out there. Rex, what else stood out to you from the day one as we finish out this mini pod from round one of the U.S. Open? Obviously, the 78 from Victor Hovland stands out to me. As well as the three late bogeys for Brooks Koepka to turn in an even par round of 70. My pick to win, Colin Morikawa, also in the house at 70 as well. What other headlines caught your eye on this Thursday?
Well, let's just go to the bottom of the leaderboard then. That seems to be fun when we're doing this. Phil Mickelson, 9 over 79. That hurts. Certainly Victor Hovland, I think you just mentioned, 8 over 78. Keep going down the list. Cam Davis, who's been playing pretty well, 7 over 77. Our boy Seth Thagala, 7 over. I can keep going on and on and on. It was this golf course.
JT shot 77 as well.
Kind of glossed over that one. Tiger Woods, 4 over, although given the stat I just threw out there that the scoring average was 3 shots over par, 4 over, doesn't seem that bad. This is the time of year, and I hate to be the one that watches the ambulance, because that always has a sort of this morbid feel to it to me, but this is the one I look forward to because of what's happening today. This is the USGA at its best. It's on a classic golf course where it's a proven championship venue, and it doesn't take a lot to bring it right to the edge, and they've done it, because I don't know if – I didn't hear one player today. Actually, I think Colin Morikawa had some comments about sort of the consistency of the sand in the bunkers, but outside of that, I didn't hear one player complaining about it. And when you have a scoring average among the best players in the world, that's 3 shots over par, you almost always get somebody complaining about it. I think it's a testament to how cool this golf course is and why the USGA decided that we're going to make this a staple in our venues. And it's like, it's much watched TV to me, because the rest of the year, it seems like all we're doing is racing to 20 under par to see who's going to win the event. This is actually just going to be a race of attrition.
Keep in mind, this is, I think, exactly what you and I thought would happen in this opening round. The USGA was not going to get crazy with some of these hole locations in the opening round. You have 156 players, many of whom are final qualifiers into this. There's some amateurs in the field. Pace of play was already dreadfully slow, sort of tricking up the golf course is not what they were particularly interested in doing on Thursday or Friday. Get back to us on Saturday. Let's see if there's any more kvetching or hand-wringing on Saturday. That is when I think they're particularly going to be putting the screws to this golf course and seeing, I think, this winning score. Again, you're still looking at a 5-6-7 under par, but I do feel like with some of the names that we have atop this leaderboard, in particular Roy McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau, I think we're set up in store for a very exciting Friday. All right, Rex, you have a sausage finger up.
Thank you. I thought you were going to ignore the sausage finger. No, I was going to do one hot take before we get out of here. I ran it by you. You didn't seem very excited about this, but I'm going to throw it in here really quick because I know how important keeping the mini pods mini is to you. However, I'm going to do this, and please, North Carolina, leave me alone. Like, I don't want to get in some sort of turf war with you on this one. This is just my opinion, and I will tell you, North Carolina barbecue is not my thing. I don't like the tang. I don't like the vinegar base. It's just not mine. And our colleague Mark Slaybaugh and I were talking about it today, and I've come up with the perfect formula. I like pulled pork from Georgia. I like ribs from Memphis. And I like brisket from Texas.
I can't disagree with anything you just said.
Oh, so you feel the same way about North Carolina? I thought you were going to run and hide.
I like the tang. It wouldn't be my first choice. I think it's a nice change of pace. I'm not a huge, sweet, southern, sticky guy. I think that can also grow tiresome. Like, if that was your sort of one model, I think you'd get sick of that real quick. I think probably if you were to do something over and over again, you would go Texas style, where it's just very heavy, salt and pepper, very rich. But I've been a big fan of Memphis ribs. I love Georgia style pulled pork, and I love the heavy pepper forward flavor that you get from Texas barbecue as well. Again, I don't dislike Carolina barbecue. I like the occasional tang and twang that you do get from the vinegar base. But again, it just wouldn't be my first choice.
Not a fan. I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. Just going to go with not a fan. And I'm going to say, and I'm shocked you didn't do this, Georgia mustard base is the best. Like, you of all people, I'm shocked.
I'm not from Georgia. I merely spent 4 years there.
But you're homework to the max.
From the Harvard of the South. All right. That is officially going to be the end of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex has to scurry off to do 90 seconds of bad television on Live From. He'll be back there again on Friday night. In the meantime, NBCSports.com/golf. I will have a story on Rory and Scotty dueling in the sun. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Friday night.